and no C. Have both of you signed in?
Yes, sir.
And Ms. Whitley, whenever you're ready.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Would you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. If I could reserve 3 minutes, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lauren Whitley with the Richmond Public Defender's Office on behalf of Mr. Turner. This case turns around an Idaho statute, 18-1506, which is not similar to any sexually violent offense in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Mr. Turner, as we stated in our briefs, is required to register in Virginia as a sex offender, as he is required or was required to register in Idaho. However, as a nonviolent sex offender, he was registering as required, and that was established at the trial in this case by his multiple registrations over the course of the late spring and early summer of 2016. Essentially, in this case, the Commonwealth never met its initial burden to establish that the Idaho conviction was similar.
Before you get to similar,
yes,
let's talk about F double I.
Sure.
Because I think you got to get past that before
sure.
you get to substantially similar.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And in my reply brief, I attempted to lay out our position. I think the language of the statute is very plain, that little F does not require every single person who is required to register out of state to register in Virginia as a sexually violent offender. I will tell, this is not in the record, I will tell the court I called the Virginia State Police just to see if that's how they interpreted the statute. They actually don't interpret it that way. But what is in the record is the language of the statute, well, what is in the statute is the plain language of the statute itself. And when we look at F, if we interpret it the way that the Commonwealth is asking this court to do, what we then have is someone who, when they're out of state, is required to register not only then as a sexually violent offender, but also as an offender under subsection B, as a conviction for criminal homicide, and as a conviction for murder. And that's important because subsection B offenses and criminal homicide only require registration once a year. And they're only penalized initially as misdemeanors if that registration is not complied with or falsified. For murder and violent sex offenders, that registration is every 90 days, and if it's not complied with, is a felony. So it cannot be that the legislature intended that someone be required to register 90 days and annually and be subject to penalties that could either be a misdemeanor or a felony. The plain language of the statute indicates that those are essentially phrases that qualify each of the prior definitions. So if we read it as it's written under subsection F, what the legislature is saying is that anyone convicted of an offense under subsection B for an offense similar out of state or required to register for an offense similar to subsection B is so required in Virginia. Anyone convicted of a criminal homicide that is an out-of-state conviction similar to one in Virginia or so required to register for a criminal homicide conviction out-of-state is so required to register in Virginia, and on down the line. So then, in order to establish that Mr. Turner was required to register as a sexually violent offender, he would have to have been convicted of a sexually violent offense or required to register as a sexually violent offender in Idaho.
Why couldn't the General Assembly have intended that if you have to register in another state and you choose to move to the Commonwealth of Virginia, we're going to hold you to the strictest standard as far as registry is concerned?
I think the plain language of the statute just contradicts that, Your Honor. When we look at F, the language of it is that each of these four categories of offense, as defined, and I'll just read it, highlighting it, as defined in this section, includes, and then we have little I, any similar offense under the laws of any foreign country, out-of-state conviction, essentially, or little I, too, any offense for which registration in a sex offender and crimes against minor registry is required. So the way that that statute reads on its face is, any offense listed in subsection B, as defined in this section, includes any similar offense for an out-of-state conviction, or any offense for which registration in a sex offender and crimes against minors registry is required.
And the same goes for sexually violent offense, that a sexually violent
right.
offense as defined in this section includes either a similar offense or, and that's a big word there, or instead of and, any offense for which registration in a sex offender and crimes against minors registry is required under the laws of the jurisdiction where the offender was convicted.
Right.
And so how do you get past sexually violent offense includes Double I, any offense for which registration and sex offender and crimes against minors registry is required under the laws of the jurisdiction where the offender was convicted.
I think that, Your Honor, the plain language of the statute avoids an absurd result, and that's what I go back to again. I don't think that it is as ambiguous. It may not be the best written section of the statute, but what it's saying is that if you were required to register as a sexually violent offender, then you're required to register here. And what I would state is and maybe how I would attempt to support that plain reading of the statute is that to read it the other way is absurd. Because
why does it have to be absurd that the General Assembly would simply hold out-of-state people that are forced to register either for a homicide or for a sexually violent offense or for murder or for any other offense listed in subsection B, that if you choose to move into the Commonwealth of Virginia, we're going to hold you to the strictest standards of registry? Why is that absurd?
Because the Commonwealth's reading actually isn't that we're holding you to the strictest standard. We're holding you to both standards, which is internally conflicting. So if we read that statute the way that...
But why couldn't that be our reading?
Because I think that reaches an absurd result and is contrary to the plain language, Your Honor, because...
But how is that... Once again, how is it an absurd result if the General Assembly could intend to hold people that move into the Commonwealth of Virginia knowing that they're registered sex offenders, we're going to hold them to the highest standard?
Because it's not just that standard that this statute, if read that way, is holding an individual who moves from an out-of-state conviction to register here is. They're not only required to register as a sexually violent offense under that reading, they're also required to register as an offender listed under subsection B, as a criminal homicide conviction, as a murder. And so,
but they're not all separate registries. Let's be honest here.
Right.
It's one registry. It's just
right.
Whether or not you have to register annually or every 90 days.
Right.
So what's absurd about the General Assembly deciding that, once again, if you're someone who has to register in another state based on the nature of your conviction, or it's substantially similar, and you move to the Commonwealth of Virginia, we're going to hold you to the strictest standards of registry and force you to register every 90 days.
Well,
that's what happens when you come to the Commonwealth of Virginia.
First of all, Your Honor, I think if the General Assembly intended to do that, they would have written that, and they did not in the statute.
But arguably they did.
Well, I don't think, Your Honor, I guess in my reading of it, the plain language doesn't support that interpretation. Because the problem becomes, so say
let's
that
assume it does.
So say that that is what the Assembly intended. The problem becomes as this statute is written on the face of it, is then someone is required to register every 90 days. So if they're found in violation of that 90-day registry, this statute has classified them under four different categories. As at subsection B, as criminal homicide, which are only misdemeanors if there's a violation, and then as murder, as sexually violent offender, which is a felony. So I think that penalty clause under 18.2-472.1 contradicts that interpretation of the statute. And when we look at the code section as a whole, which courts are charged with doing, and to read it in uniformity, it has to be that those are simply qualifiers of those well-defined categories in the statute. And the General Assembly did make pains to specifically define those categories under subsection B, under criminal homicide, under murder, and under sexually violent offender. And then these qualifiers are just further elaborating what happens when someone does move into our state. So if someone is required to register for a murder conviction, as we would qualify it, they're required to register here. They're required to register as a sexually violent offender. Even if that statute isn't similar, they're required to register here. And so they're simply further defining those categories. If this court were to hold that simply being an out-of-state conviction automatically makes you a sexually violent offender, it by definition has to hold all the other categories apply.
So what's the purpose then of having or between little I and, or I and double I when we're talking about a sexually violent offense? Because if it doesn't have to be substantially similar, it could just be any offense that requires registration in another state. What's the purpose in having a war there?
I think that is differentiating between the conviction and the registration requirement, Your Honor. So it's saying that any offense listed in subsection B, as defined in this section, includes...
But we're just talking about sexually violent offense.
We are. I understand. So I can read it as that, Your Honor.
So,
I apologize.
So just extract all of the others from the equation and say, sexually violent offense, as defined in this section, includes either little I or... double I and the little I or double little I, they're very different.
I agree, Your Honor, except I don't think that the court can read that statute in a vacuum that way, because there is an and before that sexually violent offense in the statute.
I agree, but the only thing we're talking about here is a sex offense.
It's true, Your Honor, but we are talking about, though, the plain language of the statute and the statutory interpretation of that plain language. And in that context, this court does have to look to the entirety of the statute in order to determine what I would argue to read the language as it's written. And I think that that and before the sexually violent offense is significant, because it's signifying that I and little I one and little I two are qualifiers, are further defining those sections, and are not categorizing broadly that if you're convicted of any of these four things, you're automatically a sexually violent offender.
And at the risk, and I'm trying not to hijack your whole argument, but at the risk of, I guess, beating a horse further to death, even including any offense listed in subsection B, criminal homicide and murder, what possible difference do those coming before sexually violent offense make in what they say sexually violent offense includes here?
Because then we're saying that each of those four categories include all of those things. Essentially that if you're required to register out of state, because the way that statute reads is any offense, criminal homicide, murder, and sexually violent offense as defined in this section includes any similar offense or any offense for which registration, then you're required to register as all four of those categories. And the legislature has made clear in other sections of the statute very plainly that those are different categories. They're different requirements, they're different penalties.
If you're convicted in the Commonwealth of Virginia, but apparently not maybe if you're convicted in another state.
Well, then why do we penalize a sexually violent offender differently than we do a nonviolent offender?
Once again, we're talking about people, residents of and
right.
people who have been convicted within the Commonwealth of Virginia. Here we're talking about people who have been convicted in another state who choose to move to the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Well, Your Honor, I think that then the language that goes into the code section similar and substantially similar would become superfluous. I mean, if we're going to say that anyone who is convicted
but what if something,
or registers
what if something that requires registry in the Commonwealth of Virginia doesn't require registry in Idaho, then wouldn't you get to substantially similar at that point in time?
Well, I think that yes, but I think that the problem becomes you have language in the statute that's not being read to its full effect if we don't read everything together. And so I think what the Commonwealth is asking, and I guess that's my argument in response to your Honor's questions, is asking us to read that section F in isolation, is to pull apart the language, not read the registry statute in its entirety, not read it in context with the penalty statute under 18.2-472.1. And when it's read altogether, to find that it is uniform, this court has to hold that is not the requirement. And I think that then opens up the door to a lot of confusion about what registration requirements exist and then what the penalties are. Because if you're required to register, even at the most severe, every 90 days, but you're categorized as an out-of-state conviction that's similar to something under subsection B, does that automatically default then to the felony conviction under the penalty range? That then is unclear, and I would argue an absurd result if that's the reading of the statute. However, if you read it together, as it's written plainly, it's clear that what they're defining further are each individual category. And under that, Mr. Turner was not convicted of a sexually violent offense. I'm into my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve it. I'm happy to answer any other questions on other areas of our argument.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Leah Darren for the Commonwealth. Getting straight to the subsection F issue that the Court has addressed, the argument, I agree with other counsel that I contacted the state police about this particular aspect of the sex offender registry. And I've contacted state police, and they don't look at this particular subsection of the code the same way. But as I have argued on brief, and the court has discussed this morning, but that's not, you know, that's neither here nor there. What we have here is an interpretation of the sex offender registry. It is not a penal statute. It was enacted to protect members of our community, and particularly our children, from becoming the victim of criminal offenders and specifically sex offenders. And the statute specifically states in 9.1-20 that we are to liberally construe this statute to carry out its purpose. So if you look at subsection F, little i, what they're saying in a reasonable interpretation of that particular subsection is that if a defendant has been classified as a sex offender in a foreign jurisdiction, that Virginia is going to classify him as a sexually violent offender, requiring him to go through the 90 days versus registration and re-registration every 90 days versus 360 days. We are going to make it a felony if you get your foreign conviction, which you are required to register in another state, and you come here, you violate, it's a felony, not a misdemeanor. And it makes sense because it avoids the very problems that if you get into other counsel's argument on brief that she hasn't been able to talk about this morning, if you get into it, you're having to parse through code section after code section to see if there's parity between those code sections or substantial parity, and it thwarts the purpose of the statute to go through that process. So it is our position that this, under the liberal construction, that this statute is entitled, and it has been, and the court has been directed to give it by the legislature, that under little i, if you're convicted in a foreign jurisdiction and you are required to register by virtue of that conviction in the foreign jurisdiction's sex offender registry, then when you come to Virginia, you bring yourself to Virginia, you are going to be deemed a sexually violent offender, and you're going to have to step, and we have those stepped up provisions under the Act. So we submit.
So regardless of what the offense is, whether it's violent, nonviolent, whatever, if you're coming into Virginia, you register as if it's a violent.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that that's what that.
If it's a registry offense in the state where you're convicted.
In the foreign conviction, and in, it's absolutely clear from the conviction order in this case that he was required to register in Idaho before he came to Virginia. So,
does it matter whether he was required to register as a violent or a nonviolent felon in the other state?
No, I don't believe so. Not at all. Under this little i, all it says is if you've got to register in the other state, we're going to deem that, it's going to be deemed a violent sexual offense for purposes of the Virginia registry.
Do the other things that appear in subsection F before sexually violent offense have any bearing on that? For example, any offense listed in subsection B, or criminal homicide or murder?
Your Honor, I don't think so. Our argument is that they do not. Or if they are given, if this statute is given the liberal construction that it's entitled to, and it's clear that to me, anyway, that in reading through this statute, what are we trying to avoid here? And what we're trying to protect our children. From.
But we've got to read the language, and we've got to read the statute as a whole.
Absolutely.
So how do we justify your interpretation in
light
of...
I don't think other counsel's arguments cut against a liberal construction of this subsection of F, is my answer to that. And then...
So essentially you're
saying...
And
it avoids... And it, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, not at all. So essentially you're saying that even though you've got these four things listed and there's an and before sexually violent offense, that you still don't lump them together in one particular basket. That it means any offense listed in subsection B can include little I or little 2. Criminal homicide can include little I or little 2. Murder can include little I or little 2. And then sexually violent offense as well?
That's my reading of the statute in conjunction with the fact that this is not a criminal, this is not a criminal, the Registry Act is not criminal in nature, and the statute is entitled to liberal instruction, construction. It avoids the very problem that is presented in this case of parsing through. You know, so we have one statute in Idaho which covers a variable of different crimes, and trying to see if those crimes are similar to something, sexual abuse of a child in Idaho, to see if that offense is similar to some sort of sexual abuse crime in Virginia. And it seems to go to the very heart of the purpose of this act, and that is to protect our children. I will go on and argue that the offense of which the defendant was convicted under 18.2 472.1b, it says that any person convicted of a sexually violent offense as defined in 19.1-902 who fails to register or re-register is guilty of a Class 5 felony. Now, failing to re-register or register under the Virginia registry, Sex Offender Registry Act, is dependent upon the triggering conviction. And in this particular case, the triggering conviction is an out-of-state conviction. It is a conviction for felony sexual abuse of a child under the age of 16. Under 19.1-902, the foreign conviction to qualify has to be similar to the Virginia offenses listed in 9.1-902E. Now, I want to sidetrack just a second, because I think the argument has been made that, well, we have to find a Virginia statute that is in parity with this, or substantial parity with, let me use the correct words. We have to find a Virginia statute that is similar to this Idaho statute. And if that's the test, we're not going to find it, because the Idaho statute covers a number of different offenses that are broken out under Virginia law. So we're required to go through the Idaho to determine whether it's similar. We have to go through the Idaho statute. We have to look at the Idaho statute and say, well, do we find a Virginia offense that is similar? And in this particular case, the judge looked at the statute itself, it was introduced into evidence. It's sex abuse of a child under the age of 16. From the record, we know, number one, that the victim was under the age of 16. We know that the defendant, based on the information in the order, was 20, almost 21, at the time he committed the offense. We know that he was convicted of a felony. We know he was convicted of a felony that carried a maximum potential sentence of 15 years. And we know he received, they have different words in Idaho, but basically a 10-year sentence. And so if you look, the way the judge interpreted that was he looked at the offense and said he found that it was similar. And the judge uses the word substantially similar, but the language we're looking here is it similar? Does it mean having characteristics in common? Is it alike in substance or essentials? So the judge is presumed to know the Virginia law, and the judge found that it was similar. The Idaho statute was similar to Virginia offenses.
But so ultimately, the judge was not required to go through that process or that exercise, was he?
Well, I thought, Your Honor, I thought about that. And if this is the defendant's, I think he could have brought some sort of independent action about his classification as a violent sexual offender for purposes of the registry. But if you look at Johnson, you don't have the defendant bringing an independent action when he's been deemed a sex offender under the registry. Johnson comes in when he violates. And then he says, well, my North Carolina conviction didn't qualify. This court said, oh, yes, it did. But, so, I do think, I wish I could say that he didn't have to get into it, but I do think that under Johnson, he needed to make that determination. But the judge did make that determination. The judge is presumed to know the law. The statute was in the record. And if you look at the Idaho statute 18-1506, it's broken out into four different parts. The first part, A, is to solicit a minor under the age of 16 to participate in a sexual act. That, we submit, is like the indecent liberties. It's similar to the indecent liberty statute. Subsection B is cause sexual contact with a minor not amounting to lewd conduct. So that is something short of, with children, what we would say would be carnal knowledge, something short of carnal knowledge. Part C is making photographic or electronic recordings. That's similar to our child pornography statute, 18.2.374.1. And then you have subsection D, which is induce, cause, or permit a minor child to witness an act of sexual conduct. Again, that falls under our indecent liberties section 18.2.370. And I can go through the different parts of the code section 18.2.370 and 18.2.374.1, but we submit that the court, in making its determination, would have been, he's presumed to know the law. And so it's our position that given the liberal construction of the Sex Offender Registry Act that to which it's entitled, and looking at the Idaho Code section, and looking at the offenses that Virginia has classified as sexually violent, that this offense falls within the parameters of those offenses which are classified as sexually violent under the Registry Act. And if at that point the defendant were able to say, no, no, the specifics of my crime don't fall under that code, under the Act, then certainly the burden, and we've cited the burden shifting cases, the burden would shift to him to prove that up.
Are you qualifying Johnson? As I recall in the Johnson case, it seems like that was from North Carolina, and it seems like that he didn't have to register in North Carolina. Is that was correct?
Yes,
which
that's right.
Distinguishes it from what we have here because we have.
Yes, that's right.
Okay,
so that's the F, the subsection mm-hmm. F argument, and then you move into the construction of the Act itself. We submit that the evidence in this case was sufficient for the judge to make his determination that the defendant was classified as the offenses were similar. Now, again, we don't want to get into this case is different from the substantially similar analysis that the court applies to recidivist statutes and punishment enhancement statutes. It's a really different analysis. This is a distant cousin. This is the standard is less, and the interpretation is entitled to liberal construction. So we submit, when you put all of this together, that the trial court was entitled to conclude, as it did, that the defendant had been previously convicted of an offense that was deemed sexually violent under the Virginia Registry Act, and that the evidence was sufficient to support the conviction. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Ms. Whitley, you've got your rebuttal time, and I promise I'm going to keep my big mouth shut.
No, I obviously want to talk about what the court's concerned about. That's absolutely why I'm here. And I'm actually going to go back to that issue, because I also wanted to highlight that at the beginning of 9.1-902, The definition section under subsection A supports my argument. And that is because it specifically categorizes the offenses that require registration and separates out sexually violent offense from that any offense similar to an out-of-state conviction or any offense which requires registration. So I think that goes to show the legislature's intent using that plain language that what they're talking about is if someone has to register out of state, they have to register in Virginia. And then the Virginia State Police does have to look to the convictions or the facts of those convictions as far as categorizing them as a sexually violent offender in Virginia or a nonviolent offender in Virginia. I also just wanted to highlight two quick things in response to the Commonwealth's argument. The similar versus substantially similar, this court actually noted in Johnson, was a very slight difference in standards. I think here, with a statute such as the Idaho Code section that actually criminalizes behavior that's not criminal in Virginia, by making the offense 16 and under, it really removes a lot of those kind of subsections from the Virginia criminal statutes, because our statutes often start at 15 and under. I think that makes it not similar very clearly. And I think this court can look to the substantially similar case law under DUI, under distribution, and things like that to see that this court has consistently held behavior criminal in other states but not criminal in Virginia is not something that's substantially similar and certainly not similar. I also would state that I think that while overall the sex offender registry is to be construed liberally per the statute, this is penal in nature. Where we're talking about a violation of law, we're talking about a felony conviction here for Mr. Turner. And when the court looks at that, it certainly has to construe the statutes in favor of Mr. Turner and against the Commonwealth. And I would state that that supports his argument, reading the plain language of the statute, looking at the statutes as a whole, in coalition with or in combination with 47.2.1, it's clear that his out-of-state conviction was simply a non-violent conviction. Again, we're not disputing that he was required to register in Virginia. He just didn't have to register every 90 days. And I would just briefly highlight, in my review of the statutes, there's actually no way or process available to him to challenge that category. He can only challenge his requirement to register under the sex offender registry statute, but not his his qualification as a violent sex offender, and I think that's just important to note. So we would ask that this court reverse and dismiss his conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come down.